Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. People make mistakes in life and are paying a high price for those mistakes. However, incarcerated human beings should not be judged or stereotyped, as circumstances leading to downfalls are all different, and many under the age of 25 when committing a crime and not having that responsibility in their maturity. C.W. Fleming is a husband and wife writing duo who personifies the meaning of no holds barred, with an ability to thrive as a couple in spite of being physically separated by incarceration. Candace incorporates her background in education and love for writing into publication of their works. Willie, who survived the harshest of at-risk factors, is equipped to speak to the persistence pain of all types of individuals. As such, Willie is the creative engine behind the literary works produced by the couple, from concept to creation. His pen provides a unique perspective to world issues and offers solutions to social problems. Willie received a 48-year sentence in the Texas Department of Corrections, and going into his 10th year of incarceration, has written three now-published books: Elephant Valley, Love Tested, Jesus Christ in the Criminal Justice System, and The Prisoner's Pen. Many in society believe rehabilitation comes from within the penal system, but who really rehabilitates who? Most rehabilitation comes from prisoners themselves, with support from the outside. We have Candace Fleming on the line with us today on the phone and on the radio, and she is going to be talking about her husband and their stories. So let's welcome the wife of Willie Fleming. Candace, are you on with us? Hello? Candace? Okay, Candace, are you on with us?
Am I? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I'm sorry, we had a little bit of confusion here. Would you like to talk about, a little bit about your situation? And I want to thank you for being on with us. You have a unique story to tell, and we're all ready to hear it.
Thank you so much, first of all, for having me on and just for being a voice for incarcerated individuals across the world. I appreciate that truly. So we do have a pretty unique story. I am Candace, and my husband is Willie Fleming, as you said. He is in the Texas Department of Corrections. We're entering year 10, and it's been a unique 10 years. He actually had served time before and came home and was doing great on parole and just working in the community and doing lots of things to demonstrate the rehabilitation that he had walked out. And just as an aside, he got hit by an 18-wheeler and was prescribed painkillers. And so between point A and point B, he had a bad day and made a bad decision and ended up back in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. And he has always had the mind of, as you said before, self-rehabilitation, staying focused beyond the walls, has always been one to try to lift others, even though he himself has been down. And so that's been our journey for 10 years. I guess in 2009, 2010, he decided he wanted to write and to contribute his thoughts, you know, to problems and issues. And so his first book was Elephant Valley, Love Tested, which is a fiction novel, but it actually tackles some of the thoughts and ideas about HIV and AIDS in the world and, you know, how it's progressively spread in our communities. Excellent read. And then Jesus Christ in the Criminal Justice System is really a interesting short read, but powerful, just talking about the impact of not forgetting those who are incarcerated. And so he takes a look at different prisoners from a biblical perspective and the importance of ministry to those who are in the system. And then the last one is probably my favorite and most, I mean, I'm proud of all of them, but The Prisoner's Pen is the most recent work that he published. And he actually corralled and got together 25 individuals who were at the WIN unit here in Texas. And many of them who are ADSEG or who have been violent or who have been angry or who had just, you know, had different ideas about how they were going to do their time. And he brought them together and they wrote a poem collection called The Prisoner's Pen, Poems of Pain, Passion, and Purpose. And if I tell you, I've gotten so many letters from loved ones and family members who were just so proud to see their loved ones who are now published authors. And we take proceeds from that book to donate to organizations who work with children of incarcerated parents. That was their contribution to doing something significant outside of the walls. And so just incredibly proud of his mind and his fortitude and his fight, irrespective of having a 48-year sentence that he is currently standing against or standing to do today.
Candace, before we go any further, I wanted to ask you, is there a website for the books or some way that people can actually order the books?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for asking. So they are all on Amazon. So all of the titles on Amazon, but we also have a website, cwflemingbooks.com. Again, that's cwflemingbooks.com, and they can be purchased there. And then there's a familiesofconviction.org. Either one of those, you can access more information just about Willie's story and the work that we seek to do, irrespective of going through this journey, at familiesofconviction.org.
Okay, because I was going to say, you mentioned Jesus Christ and the criminal justice system, and I remember all the scriptures it talks about with, you know, visiting the sick and in prison and all these things. So, and it even said that Jesus actually preached to the souls in the prisons. A lot of people don't connect prisoners with Christ, and it's sad because when I tell everyone this all the time, God forgave Moses, he forgave King David, he forgave Saul, now the Apostle Paul, that so many people worship, and yet people do not understand that these were all sinners, and they committed capital crimes, but God forgave them. But I wanted to find out, when did you and Willie actually start this duo, partnership in the writing of your books?
Yes, like I said, in 2011, maybe 12. So Willie went into prison in 2010, and the first 2 years were very difficult. But when he finally made up his mind that I'm going to go forward and do this, you know, time in a positive way that my mind stays free, he said, I'm going to do this by way of writing. And so he started writing, and I started writing with him. So he would send me handwritten chapters or typed chapters, and I would type them outside or edit them. And then on some books, you know, it started collaborating, and he would ask, well, Candace, what do you think? And so the duo was birthed in 2012, the end of 2012, beginning of 2013. And then the first book was actually published in 2014.
I think it's awesome. It's very unique. It's a way for husbands and wives or any kind of loved ones in their incarcerated loved ones to be able to do things together and feel connected. And it's so sad because the rehabilitation is always coming from the prisoners themselves. It seems as though they're not really rehabilitating prisoners inside. And so prisoners are coming up with their own unique ways of being productive and at the same time serving their time. Now, how long a sentence did Willie get? Is he going to be home soon? Again, I don't know if you mentioned it already.
Well, he was, I may have, but I said a lot, so forgive me. But he was sentenced to 48 years. It was an aggravated sentence in here in Texas. That means you're supposed to do half of that time before you come up for parole. But I have to tell you that we are believing God for a miracle. So I don't know if that miracle is going to come by way of legislation being changed or, you know, God moving in any other way. But we are believing that he will be home way sooner than 2058. That is his projected release date, 2058. But I always have to, like I said, say we believe that that's going to turn out differently.
Well, God did say he was going to free his captives. And a lot is happening in legislation around the country.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things is this coronavirus is kind of like sped it up a little bit because they're talking more about releasing prisoners, as many as possible, as soon as possible, because of the virus that's spreading into the prisons. And there has been a lot of discussion about it.
Yes, I have to tell you, Willie, actually, on top of all other things he's endured, he recently tested positive for the virus. Well, recently, it was April. He tested positive April 29th, and so he went into 14 days of quarantine. And I'm actually going to be sharing an article on our website today that he just wrote of how, I mean, I know we've seen it talked about on, you know, television, maybe some of it sensationalized and some of it not, but he really takes a look at, you know, he really didn't know if he was going to make it out of that situation. He said guys were dying in cells next to him. You know, the block where they were quarantined had been deemed the wing of death. And he just, you know, it was really hard to hear and just to read, you know. But I thank God that he did make it through that. But he said it is definitely horrific. And anything that we've seen or heard, it's worse than that, you know, when you're inside and having to endure it. They've actually had 12 guys on his particular unit alone and two guards to die of the virus where he is. So it's a scary time, and I know that laws are laws and people have ideas and feelings about that, but I do hope that legislation takes heed and that they do something about freeing those who can come home, you know, and with the safe community still being safe, but as many as they can let help go, I really pray that they will do that.
My biggest fear is they're taking their sweet time about releasing prisoners, and as a result, as you say, it's spreading quickly, and this is something that has been consistently talked about by doctors outside of the prison setting, that if they don't start releasing immediately, there's going to be a widespread, and it's going to go out, it's spreading out into the hospitals, and the doctors, the nurses, they're going to be so overwhelmed. So they have been almost begging the system, the government, to start releasing prisoners as soon as possible. Unfortunately, and I have to say this, because there are legislative members out there, there are government leaders out there that could care less, and it's sad because it could be one of theirs. And they have to think about how we would respond. You know, the families of the incarcerated, how they would respond if they were in the leadership position. They would not be keeping prisoners in because of vengeance, retaliation, you know, targeting, because of connections. They wouldn't be doing this. And as soon as these situations spread, it's going to be so devastating, not only for the prisoners, but for the prison officials, the guards, the government leaders, the hospitals. And they just are taking their sweet time, and they need to move on it quickly.
I agree. You know, one thing I see about this virus is it has been the great equalizer, right? It doesn't matter of your race or your social status or class. And so I continue to watch the departments of corrections across the nation and say, you know, you can continue to think that you're strong and mighty or have the last say, but, you know, and I don't pray ill on anyone, but I just agree with what you just said. Like, you have to consider others as you would consider yourself in this matter, because this virus is not a respecter of persons. And so I agree.
Yes,
and I am definitely praying and hoping for a change soon and very soon.
Well, I know one thing, God sees all, and man can say one thing, God can do another thing, and that's what I look at. We have a powerful, miraculous God, and something is going to come of this. Something is going to come of it.
I tell you, I stand on that every day. I definitely agree with that. I do.
So how often do you get to see your husband? Oh, you don't anymore. That's right, too.
Well,
they also
right.
have the suspended visits.
They have.
And, you know,
so prior
is
to
your husband, is he double-celled or a single-celled?
Well, he's been both. So at this, he's at a really old unit. And so currently he is in a single-cell unit, but he has been in a dorm and a double-cell unit at this particular unit, ID unit. So now before COVID, when I lived in Houston initially, and I would go and see him every weekend. I have a son who's now 10, and he was 10 months when we started this journey, and we literally went every weekend because it was close enough to do so. I moved a bit further away for work, and so we try to go twice a month now because I do, you know, the value of visits, you know, is it just there's no words for how visits keep families connected. And so if you're able to do so, that, and that's, like I said, that's largely a part of Jesus Christ and the criminal justice system's message. If you can, you should, because it helps to keep the family together. Visits have been suspended since March 13th, I believe it was. So I have not seen him since March, and there's no end in view for when they're going to bring that up. So this is the longest we have not visited in 10 years.
And the suspension is around the country. It's not just one state.
Mm-hmm.
They have suspended visits around the country. And the sad thing is the prisoners are being detained in their cells 23 hours a day, some 24 hours a day. And I find in talking with some of the prisoners now, it's even affecting their respiratory problems. I mean, they have a shortness of breath when they're talking. They have to take, you know, deep breaths when they're talking. And I believe it's because of that, the same breathing, the same air. A lot of them are being detained in their cells without any property, without any televisions, which is also devastating because they're being kept in cages, treated less than an animal. And I think it's very unfair, inhumane. And I don't know where these human rights organizations are in this particular situation. I know it's around the country, it's around the world right now. But they need to do something, because if the prison officials, if the Department of Corrections nationwide are not going to make changes so that these prisoners during this crisis can have at least be treated humanely enough to have their property, their televisions, something to keep them occupied, to let them know what's going on the outside, they have not a clue what is going on. They have not, other than talking with their loved ones on the phone, they don't know what's going on out here. And that, to me, is it's lower than any other country. I have never heard of any inhumane treatment like this in any other country. And they talk about human rights violations in other countries when I feel a lot of that is right here in our own backyards.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that. Now, I have to say, and I believe definitely is the grace of God and the prayers of the, just prayers, the unit where Willie is, now they are on lockdown, precautionary lockdown, so they haven't had phones for the last 2 months. But I must say that their warden is one who was sent by God, because he has really worked to be as humane as he could in the conditions. So he has taken to emailing one per we have a wives and mothers group that he communicates with daily. He has made sure that commissary is running on that particular unit, and they're bringing commissary to the actual to the guys there as much as he could, like in the dorms he's allowed this. So I just have to say that, because I don't take for granted the gift that he is, because we've had three wardens during our journey, and this is the first one that I've seen who has been so decent and so human, and as much as he could, he has tried to treat the guys with dignity and respect and do as much as he can. And so I appreciate that, and I want to say that about Warden Moore.
Oh, we need to give him a shout out then. What is his name again?
Absolutely. His name is Rocky Moore, and he's at the Texas Department of Corrections. And he, like I said, he really is a gift from God. He deals with them compassionately as much as he can, and I don't take that for granted.
We have to, you know, acknowledge those that are humane and that are doing well. Because, you know, one time on Facebook, people were going back and forth about the guards. And one guard on Facebook said that he was a former guard, and he said he was never like that. You know, he never treated prisoners the way that most guards do. And someone responded back to that, saying that if you see or know of guards or law enforcement or anyone in the in law doing something wrong, and you don't say anything, then you're just as wrong as they are. And that's the truth, because a lot of people, even in law enforcement, and I've heard of guards saying that, and prison officials who have said that they know there's a lot of injustice going on, a lot of abuse and everything, but they're not like that. If they're not like that, report the ones that are like that. When we look at law enforcement getting shot in the streets, getting killed, it could be good ones, but unfortunately, the bad ones have made that such a reputation that a lot of innocent, good people in law enforcement or in the penal system are being killed unnecessarily, because if their peers don't care enough about them to do the right things, then they should be reporting all the evil that goes on around them that they see within their peers in whoever they are abusing. But I'm glad you mentioned this warden, because you don't hear these things so too often, and it's good to know that there are some out there that are trying their best to do the right things.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we have a higher percentage of prison officials and guards that just don't care. And especially now with the coronavirus, they know that no one is going into the prisons. So they know that they're not even being held accountable. So that this is where the things are going to escalate, and there are going to be problems. I understand, too, in Massachusetts, there's been a lot of suicides in the prisons. What is it like in Texas where your husband is?
Well, I haven't heard a high number of suicides just regarding the virus. I know that's one of the things he actually talks about in Jesus Christ and the criminal justice system is just the propensity for suicide and why. And I think he's actually talking about the segregation when he's talking about that. But he says that he's told me before, it's definitely a mental battle. And, you know, prison is taxing. And it's you know, he always tells me the dungeon of demons, Candace. And so you got to imagine the worst of the worst, and not in terms of individuals, but in terms of spirits and depression and just, you know, all the things that you battle being housed in one place. And he always says, you know, it's hard. And I'll tell you this, I called to do a welfare check on my husband. Actually, it was on my birthday, April 24th. And I was just very concerned because I hadn't heard from him at the time. And, you know, I just was concerned. And so when I got a call back from the liaison, she said to me she said, you know, he's getting his regular medication. And she said, and he put in for a mental health visit. And so, of course, I was really worried because I was like, oh, my goodness, it's getting to him. You know, I was concerned. And so I said, is that routine, a mental health visit? She said, no, he requested the visit. And she went on to tell me that he had requested the visit because there was an individual on his cell block who he was concerned about. And he said that the man, you know, was very depressed, isolated, and he knew that this man wasn't doing very well, and he was requesting his mental health go and see about this individual man. He later wrote me the letter about him, and he said he was an older white gentleman, and the man had told him, if I died in here today or if I killed myself tomorrow, nobody would know, because there's nobody in my life who's seeing about me. And so it wouldn't matter. And so, you know, that just rung so loud to me about, you know, mental health and depression and suicide and how, you know, if nobody's looking and nobody's watching and nobody's tended to them and there's nobody connected to them, how I would imagine that many of them battle with that same thought. So that was, you know, just a heavy moment. You know, I was really proud of Willie, you know, because like I said, he always is looking out for the least of these. You know, he always says that, Candace, I'm always going to, you know, go and look and stand and, you know, cover the least of these. But it's a serious matter that I would imagine it takes a lot to outlive each day there.
It is difficult, I'm sure. Very difficult.
Yes, ma'am.
So many prisoners have no hope. They feel so helpless, and their loved ones feel helpless. And unfortunately, there are lawyers out there, there are politicians out there that, you know, they know that there's serious issues going on in the prisons, and yet there's little. Right now, they're trying to get the prisoners released, the less violent. But what they have to look at, too, are those who have been in for a long time, you know, those who have done good, those. You know, sometimes it's the ones that first go in, they don't serve any time at all, and they're the ones that they're looking to release. And the ones that have been there for years, especially when they get to be a certain age, that these are things that they need to consider too. But
absolutely.
I think a lot of times I look back at some of these, some attorneys, and I feel like it's almost as though they're waiting for these prisoners to commit suicide so that they can have, you know, build their cases or whatever.
Mm.
And a lot of these civil rights organizations that should be getting involved, especially now, there's more need for monitoring and oversight within the penal system than ever before because of this virus and because no one's going in.
Those were our two largest issues on last year's legislation, independent oversight and earned time credit. And so we got really close to getting the independent oversight bill passed, but of course, you know, with great opposition. So we are hoping definitely, like you said, after the virus and just so much that is being revealed through this, that at least here in Texas, I mean, we need, like you said, across the nation, that, and I know in Texas, we're going to push for it this legislation year.
That's great. It needs to be done.
Yes, ma'am.
I often think sometimes, too, what should be done is a national cry out. I think every single person who has a loved one, and there's almost 2.5 million people in prison, which is higher than any other country, much, much higher. And sometimes I know that every state operates differently, but the problems are still the same in every state. And the same abuses that go on and deprivations, the same provocations and, you know, everything, that the torment, the torture. And every state is that way, but they operate differently. And I think what needs to be done is everyone involved, the families of loved ones, incarcerated, the incarcerated, everyone should just spend maybe 1 week of just making calls throughout the country, making petitions nationwide, and just bombarding the government to make changes, to start releasing prisoners, to start looking at these things in a different light.
I definitely agree.
Just so
I so agree with that. Yes, I agree. I agree with that. And like you said, just coming together, when I first entered the journey in 2010, I was so just lost and bewildered, and I didn't know what I was getting ready to experience. I was looking for organizations who were out there, you know, in this space. And today, 10 years later, there are so many advocates groups and family groups. There's just a lot, which is because it's a lot of families impacted. But I said the same just recently. Like, what if we all just came together? And I don't know if it's a forum or like somehow we need to come together so that we can collectively, you know, advance and do something together. So I love that idea. Because it's so needed, and we're all saying the same thing because the issues are so similar. It doesn't matter what state you're in. You know, it's just so similar, and the pain is so much the same. And so I really love that idea, and maybe we can figure out how to put that in motion.
It has to be on a national. And I think that each state needs to be, I think the guidelines, the policies, the regulations, I think they all need to be made by the government to reflect the same situation, the same operations in every state. We are so dysfunctional in this country. Everything is dysfunctional because nothing is run the same. This virus, we see the government, we see the president doing all the talking when we want to hear from the doctors. We want to know directly from the doctors exactly what the threats are to our loved ones. And here we are hearing from someone that is not a doctor, someone's just making up all these rules and regulations, and we need to hear from doctors. And this is the way it is in this country. We need to hear the same thing in every state. We need to know what the policies are. And as I said, the problems are the same, but the operations are differently. Coming together as a nation and bombarding the politicians. Another thing the politicians are not aware of is because there is almost 2.5 million people incarcerated, they have loved ones, they have family members, they have friends, and you told all of them they can vote too. And these politicians that are just focusing on getting votes from those out in the communities that are totally against prison and prisoners, they might be able to vote, but look at how many are in prison. There's almost as many in prison as there are in the communities and beyond.
Yeah, I was just looking today. I saw an article come past about the felons in Florida being able to vote. And I was just thinking about small changes like that. Like the landscape is going to be so different if and when, you know, we really recognize there's a lot of power behind those walls and behind the, you know, individuals who have not been able to vote for, you know, felony reasons. Or so I definitely agree with that. I definitely agree with that message.
And so many prisoners are asking that. They're asking to focus on, please focus on the voting rights. Allow us to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's one of the things that we need to start pushing for, too. Prisoners, especially prisoners who are citizens of this country, they may be put in prison, but they are still citizens of this country. And
absolutely,
they still should have that opportunity, that privilege, that's their privilege, and that's their thing to be able to vote. They shouldn't take that away from them. To take that, I mean, that's going beyond punishment, because prisoners should be allowed to vote.
Oh, yeah.
They should be allowed to
vote. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like you said, I love how you said that. That's going beyond punishment. They use a term, I mean, I guess it's used everywhere, but I was at a forum here. And they kept saying returning citizens, returning citizens, returning citizens. And I was like, man, that's it. You know, they are citizens now and they're coming home at one point or another. And so I agree, like all the way.
It should be. They should have
yes,
that right
man.
To vote for someone that's fair, someone that is thinking fair in the penal system, you know, to give sentences that are appropriate but not overwhelming and unfair, and there's so much injustice in this country, and it shouldn't be. But if the prisoners are allowed to vote, and as I say, and you agree, they need to start focusing on allowing these prisoners to vote, and we need to do more in that area. And not just for
Definitely.
Those that are coming out, not just those on the outside, but they should be allowed to vote on the inside as well.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. When you said that, it just sparked my wheels. Like, it's not that they're just returning citizens. They're citizens now. And when when you said that, it just made my mind, a light bulb come on. Like, it's gone beyond punishment when you take away their right to be a citizen, because they are still a citizen. You know, irrespective of, you know, where they're located or even what crime they committed, they are still a citizen and do inalienable rights that are supposed to be guaranteed to the citizens of this country. And so, definitely something that we need to pursue more aggressively. And I just hadn't thought about it like that until you just said that.
I have to mention also that some of the people that are in power have loved ones that have committed crimes. There's been situations, and I want to bring this up because I really think that these things are really something that needs to be looked into. There was a lawyer on Cape Cod who had a daughter who stabbed her husband, I believe it was 17 times. And the daughter was 27 years ago. The daughter was supposed to be going for an evaluation before her court date. And after that, there was nothing ever mentioned about the daughter. And a couple of weeks ago, I went on the internet to see whatever happened with her, what she got sentenced or whatever. There's no mention of her. Her father moved from Cape Cod to New York. It's completely wiped out. The girl came from a family who had a history of lawyers and judges. And there was no mention ever after that incident on Cape Cod 27 years ago of this girl. And then, of course, we know what happened with the son of the governor when they had to bring the plane down because of some sexual assault that was apparently going on in the plane. And there was nothing ever mentioned about that. The very people that have the power to start making positive changes in the prisons and to start helping prisoners who are being unfairly judged or unfairly sentenced, those are the ones that have loved ones that have committed crimes, and they have covered their loved ones' crime up, and they are still not helping those who are incarcerated, but they find a way to channel it somewhere else. And I have to bring this up because I know these are two situations that I am aware of, and these are confirmed. So, I mean, anyone can question me. Anyone can talk about it. Any lawyer won't do anything about it because they know it's true. But these are situations that happen, and this is why I think the prisons are full of people that can't afford lawyers, that don't have the power or the monies that some of these others have, and we have to consider these as well.
Listen, I'm 100% in agreement with that. So Willie, when he wrote Jesus Christ in a Criminal Justice System, there was a criminal defense attorney who saw that book, and his name is Drew Willie, and he has an organization called Restoring Justice. And the organization, their whole goal is, their whole conjecture is, if you don't have the money to pay for attorneys, then the justice system is going to be unjust. It's just not going to be in your favor. And you can't have, you know, this, you just got to reform the system starting there, because that's truth. And so he saw the book that Willie had written, and he actually asked Willie to do a special version of that book for his organization, and he now uses it as a training manual. And he actually asked Willie to be on the board of the organization. And the whole goal is saying the injustice, and mind you, he is a white man who is about 6 feet and comes from a background of privilege. And actually, you know, that's how he ended up in this space, because he said he had a court case where he really realized his privilege one day that changed his mind and how he wanted to pursue his criminal defense pathway. An amazing gentleman. And like I said, the organization Restoring Justice, they're actually working in Houston right now, Harris County, to bail out individuals who don't have money for bail given the COVID crisis. But it's just, it's so real. The disparity, the classism, the if you don't have it, then you're going to suffer more than those who do. It is so real. And I believe that that's a large, I mean, there's so many places we could start with criminal justice reform, but I definitely think that that's one of the places we got to look at. You know, if your privilege and your money makes it easier for you, and you can buy away or hide away a case because of your power, it's not just, it's not a justice system at all.
No. But yep. getting back to the books that you and Willie wrote, The Elephant Valley, Love Tested, just a little bit about that book.
It sounds really interesting. It's a fiction novel. It's very interesting. It's a fiction novel, and it's got a dual plot, actually. So there's an America plot, and then there is a plot in Africa. And basically the sub heading or the aim of the book is to talk about HIV and AIDS in the African American communities and why is it spreading so rampant. So Willie did an amazing job of weaving some narratives. So there's an artist named Bliss, who he's a rap artist, and his whole sex salacious music that he pushes, you know, one of the theories is the music and the culture that our young people ingest, you know, leads to these behaviors that lead to, you know, impacting our culture. So there's all types of storylines. There's a gentleman who's coming home from prison. So there's a storyline about him. And then in Africa, there's a Bliss's girlfriend. Her name is Queen Nisa. She's a recording artist. And she ends up in a crash in Africa where there are these children who are orphans because most of their parents have died according to the virus. And so she's taking a journey with these young people, and her eyes become open to a whole lot of things. So it's an amazing book. I can't even tell you all the things that happen in the book, but I haven't had one person who has read that book who has not said, A, I couldn't put it down, and B, when is the sequel coming? And so by the end of the book, you know, you have some real strong ideas about, you know, music and culture and HIV and AIDS and the church's role in dealing with it head on. It's just some real edutainment, that's what we call it, some real edutainment and entertaining storylines to make you really get to talking about this. And that was really one of the primary goals. We wanted people to have conversations about, man, is that real? I mean, what should the church be talking about? Should the church be talking to young people about sex and HIV? Because if there's churches on every corner in black communities, why is it continuing to ravage our communities and nobody's dealing with it? And so it's a lot that's in there, but it's super entertaining. I can't say enough about how entertaining it is. And for it to have been Willie's first book is amazing.
That is one book that I really intend to buy, because I was in Africa, and they say that HIV started in Africa, and I heard the story, mm-hmm. and it had nothing to do with Africans and the monkeys. It really didn't. And I won't get into it because it might be in the book. But I just find the HIV in connection with Africa is so interesting that it's going to be in the book, because people need to be aware of how it really started, and it really involved missionaries and things like that. And so I am definitely going to be getting that book. I'm interested
please,
in things like
and
that.
And please tell us how you feel about it and your thoughts and your review, and please share it with somebody else. One thing for certain, two for sure, it is going to start conversations. There's been nobody who's read it who has not talked about HIV or AIDS differently after putting that book down.
Yeah. And another thing about it is that everyone looks at Africa as being a jungle. They don't know. And when I was there, they're so educated in the country I was in. They're so educated. There's so much going on. And everything is so laid back. It's not rush like it is in the United States, you know. And this just it's just a peaceful environment. There's so much beauty in it and areas. And I just like to express that, because a lot of people think of the continent of Africa as being just a jungle, and it's nothing like that at all. There's more education there than there is in this country, and there's more compassion.
I think you'll be pleased when you hear that storyline. Well, he's never been to Africa, but he said the idea for that storyline came. He said he was watching the Oprah Winfrey Show in the prison. And it was one of the shows where she was talking about her girls' school in Africa, and she just began to, you know, talk about how she got connected and, you know, how being there changed her life. So it led him to start studying and researching, and I was so floored with how he developed that storyline and the characters and much of what you just said, their education, you know, their technology and its real uses as opposed to, you know, its comfort. You got to read it, and you got to tell me how you feel about it.
I definitely will be getting that book. So, and you did mention a little bit about Jesus Christ and the criminal justice system. The Prisoner's Pen.
Yes. So, The Prisoner's Pen, that really was birthed out of a couple of guys that Willie was mentoring. He teaches a class in the prison. And a couple of guys in there who were really hard and really, far gone, who were also rappers. And, you know, they had this ability to write. And so Willie just began to use that. And he said, let's put together a work. And so that started, and that turned into, like I said, 25 guys at the Wing Unit. And it's The Prisoner's Pen, Poems of Pain, Passion, and Purpose. And it really is a look at so many individual pains. There's a lot of commentary on things that happen in prison. So there's one Inmate Lives Matters poem that talks about, you know, perspective of inmates and how they feel written off. There's a series that Willie actually did that talks about inmates who died in prison, right, and from an inmate's perspective and wanting to reach out to their loved ones. And there's a section that's written directly to the children of the offenders, which is amazing. You know, it's poems to our children, and so they're expressing their pains and their, you know, their remorses through this beautiful, I mean, just some of the most amazing poetry that I've read, and I was an English major in school, you know, and so it's amazing. There's probably about 115 poems that are in there. And it's so funny because I still have about another 200 poems that were sent to me that just didn't make it in that book because we were trying to get it to print. But it's a great, great, great read. And again, you know, one of the questions was, where does the money go when people buy the book? And so very early on, they decided they wanted the proceeds from the book to go to children of incarcerated parents. So, of course, we couldn't figure out, you know, where all the sales were coming from individually. And so what we do is once we get to a certain earmark amount of sales, then we give money to organizations that serve children of incarcerated parents in the name of the book. And one last point, Willie called them all Long Shot Literary Lions. So that's their kind of pen name, right? It is a long shot for these individuals who are behind prison walls to be published authors, but they're taking it. And he would always tell them it takes a lion, you know, to do that, to take that shot and to see beyond the walls. So they are the long shot literary lions, and they produce this work. And again, I all of the books are great, and I'm super proud of all the works, but I think that one means so much because it gave life to a lot of the guys, and it gave them a look that they hadn't seen otherwise beyond the walls. And many of them are life sentence lifers, you know, many of them. And so it's a great work. It's a really good work.
That is awesome. And mm-hmm. You say that you were a teacher?
I was, yes, ma'am. I taught eighth grade reading for about 10 years. And then I taught teachers. I was an instructional coach in the Houston area. The only reason that I left is because I came to Dallas to work with a nonprofit organization. Our goal is to stop senseless violence in communities. And I actually was connected to them by way of a young man that Willie mentored in prison. And so this young man came home, and, you know, his life has changed dramatically. And he's a part of the organization, and so they extended an opportunity for me to come here and to help teach and to train. And so I really believe there was a God opportunity connecting, you know, the past to the present. And so I left the classroom to come here and do that.
Wow, that is great. So you've been quite busy yourself throughout the years.
I have indeed. I have. It's some days been easier than others, but every day it has been life given to Willie, and so that seeing that has given me strength to continue in that vein. You know, I know when we started the journey in 2010, 48 years is a daunting sentence. You know, and I don't even know if I saw the end of 48 years when we started on the journey, but I told God, if you give me the grace to do it, you know, I'm going to not only stand with them, but I'm going to keep our family connected. And that's what it's been. You know, it's been keeping life going. And the other part is we really, by the grace of God, because this is really of no good merit of our own, but by the grace of God, we really seek to live as a family. Like, you know, we do marriage, we do parenting, we do visioning, we do life purpose, you know, we do ministry as a family, and not just as a family, you know, who's separated by prison. I don't know if that makes sense. So, like, we really try to, if he were here tomorrow, we would be working to contribute social solutions to the community. We would be pouring into people. If Willie walked outside of the prison today, that's what we would be doing. We would be ministering to and serving others with our gifts. And so we try to, by the grace of God, live that way, even though he's not here yet. And so
a way of staying connected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good that you're in. Unfortunately, a lot of people feel like when their loved ones go in, that's it. And a lot of families kind of like back away or fall away or fall back, and they're left,
mm-hmm.
the prisoners are left alone without anyone to care.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like you and Willie have maintained and are definitely not going to allow that to happen with you, which is good. Which is
by
good.
By the grace of God, yes, ma'am. We have a nonprofit, Families of Conviction, and that really has been the goal. I don't necessarily have a lot of programming going on right now. I think our goal is to provide inspiration, insight, and support. So as much as I can, I try to share, you know, how do we connect and visit? So we are still walking through it and still standing in it, you know, but I know that by the grace of God, it can be done. And it's not always easy, like I said, you know, for many different reasons, but I as many families that I can encourage and support, you know, I really believe that's a ministry place that God is birthing in us, because it can be done, and it does make the difference in the life of the inmates and how they live there and how they come home, you know. And so we're trying one day at a time.
You're doing very well with it all. I just went into typed in Elephant Valley Love Tested, and all these things came up on it. The book, it just goes on and on and on. So really, anyone cannot find the book just by typing the name of the book into the browser. and it comes up.
Good.
Yes.
And C.W. Slimming. So great. In the world of publishing, I just don't understand how the Amazon third market works, but I'm learning in terms of how people could be selling a copy of the book for $200 somewhere. I don't know how that works. You don't have to pay that. If it's crazy there, you know, you can get it from the website that we have. So either way, it's fine.
Yeah. It has your name. It has Bully's name on. Also, I noticed a lot of times these people in big places, they go on CNN News and they get their books promoted by talking and MSNBC and all these different radio news stations, and their books, they got all this publicity because it's being talked about throughout the nation. And mm-hmm. people that write books like Lily and you have done the book. I mean, you type the name in and then you come across the book, but you don't get the publicity that they get. But at the same time, this is why I think Google and these search engines, they're so awesome, because you can just, you do something and it's right there for everyone mm-hmm. to see and to order from.
Yes, and I want to thank really you. Like I said, I don't even know. I woke up one morning and I follow you on Facebook, and I think I connected with you through Design Conviction. But I just want to thank you. Like, when I reached out and said, you know, just is there anything you could do to help? Thank you for giving me an opportunity to be here to talk about us and our story and the books. Like, you don't know how much of a seed that was and how much that boosted my faith, you know, to keep going. So thank you so much for what you do.
No, Candace,
for allowing
I want
to
say
here.
I want to say something, and I want the audience to hear this loud and clear. Anything that we do, we should not be doing it to get thanks or to be. It's not us that's doing it. If we focus on, and so many people have turned against our Creator, our Father, because of things that have happened in their lives, trials and mm-hmm. tribulations. One of the things is anything we do in life, we're doing it because we're led to do it by God
yes.
Himself. If anyone would just go into the book of Revelations, chapter 12, verses 7 to 12, it always says, Satan was thrown out of heaven. He was an angel. He was thrown onto this earth. And it says, woe mm-hmm. to the earth, because Satan knows he's got but a short time. We're seeing all these things coming to pass now, all the prophecies that have been, the prophetics by the prophets years ago. We're seeing it all come to pass now. When I do these things, I'm doing it to bring awareness, because there's so much injustice going on in this country, and people don't know which way to turn or how to deal with it. The worldly mm-hmm. governments are so corrupt and so greedy and so deceptive. There's so much of this going on in the country, and so many innocent people are in the prisons. So many prisoners that have made one mistake in their lifetime of serving life mm-hmm. and life without mm-hmm. parole sentences. So many prisoners like your husband with these unrealistic 48-year sentences for what? You know, I know that crime happens. We all know that people make mistakes. And unfortunately, there's a lot of loved ones that have lost their loved ones through crime. And mm-hmm. and the thing is, I know it hurts, but at the same time, pray on it, because you don't want to become a violent person because of the hatred you carry within. And this
Absolutely.
Is what so many people have done. They have built, they have let that build up inside of them. A lot of these people in prisons are in prisons because they weren't born guilty. They weren't born corrupt. They weren't born to be mm-hmm. committing crimes. They were born innocent. Somewhere along the line in this country, whether it be in their families, whether it be in society, whatever it is, somewhere along the line, they were led astray and they were led to commit a crime, whether it be violent
mm-hmm.
or nonviolent.
Mm-hmm.
When I do these things, I don't do it to be thanked, because Candace, what you're doing, what your husband is doing, is bringing awareness to others, and you're doing, it's a good deed that you're doing, your husband's doing. And every group out there that we're part of on Facebook or wherever, they're all trying to do something good. They're all trying to bring awareness. They're all trying to help one another and help their loved
yeah.
ones. And because we're not getting it from a lot of the people in government, we have to come together in unity to fight for
yes.
our loved ones, to fight for the loved ones of others. So never thank me for any of this, because you are doing just as much. And it's all yes, being, ma'am. We're all being driven by our Creator. That's the way I look
Absolutely.
At it.
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'll take that. I'll take that.
But again, if we work in unity nationwide, I think we can accomplish a lot more than by state. And I think we need to keep everything in prayer as far as our loved ones go and our brothers and sisters all over the world, because we need to know that they need help as much. There's so many situations that are much worse than ours. Even though ours may seem so desperate, there are always mm-hmm. some more serious situations.
That
but
is
I
so
think that you
true.
And your husband, are doing an awesome job. I really think it's great. And I hope others buy the books, because this is very interesting. Very interesting.
Thank you very much. I thank you for giving us the opportunity to share it, and I hope they buy it too. I do believe that they will be more than surprised and very much enjoy all of the reads, any one of them, all of them, they will definitely enjoy.
And you mentioned Inmates Lives Matters, and there's actually a group on Facebook by that
mm-hmm.
name, Inmates Lives Matter, and they have chapters all over the country. Almost every state is included in that. Yeah, they have Inmates Lives Matter, and then they go by, like, Inmates Lives Matter, Massachusetts, Inmate Lives Matter, Texas, Inmates Lives Matter, Pennsylvania. You really have to check it out. Inmates Lives Matter.
I got there because you invited me, so I definitely didn't know that. I'll check that out today. And like I said, Willie wrote that poem, and I had no idea the group. So when I saw it, I was like, wow, like I really want to share this, you know, with them. And so I will definitely make sure I share that today, because I think it gives voice to, you know, what we are all coming together and saying. Like you said, they're citizens and their lives matter too.
Yeah. And this audio will be going out to all of them anyway. It'll be going out to Inmate Lives Matter and others. But again, you know, there's a lot of groups on Facebook, you know, prisoner advocacy groups of loved ones who have loved ones incarcerated. And so it's something that it'll get out there, and you should join it and get your information out to them as well.
I most certainly will. I will. Yes, ma'am.
So, Candace, we have about 2 minutes left. If you want, if you have anything else to say, again, you might want to, again, mention your website and the site that the books are on, and anything else you want to say in these last couple of minutes.
Okay, I will. So the book websites are cwflemingbooks.com and also familiesofconviction.org. And if I can take the last couple of seconds to pray, I think that's what's on my heart to do. So, God, I just want to thank you for today and just for your faithfulness to us all to wake us up day by day and moment by moment. I thank you for every family that's represented, Father, by this call. I thank you for those of our loved ones who are behind the prison walls, God, who are your children that you continue to watch over. And I thank you for the families that support them, and for the families and loved ones who don't know how. I thank you for the children, God, who are on this journey to no desire, no fault of their own. And I just pray that you continue to keep us all against the day of the evil. Give us peace, give us grace, and just continue to pour out your love on us all. I thank you for the servants, God, who are working to advance the cause and give voice to the issues, and that we won't grow weary in well-doing, and that you continue to keep us all. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Candace, thank you so much for coming on and for sharing all of this with us. It was so interesting, and I really, really feel honored to have you on with us. I hope and pray that you will be back on maybe to give us an update in the next 4 or 5, 6 weeks. But I would love to know how things go between you and Willie and the book and everything else.
Absolutely.
I think
anytime
what you're doing,
I'm going to come
right. So unique. It's so a duo from within and without of the penal system is just awesome. And I thank you
yes,
so
ma'am.
Much for coming on with us.
Thank you.
You
again
tell
for
your husband
anytime.
Tell your husband I think he's doing an awesome job, and we hope someday to be able to interview both of you together outside of the penal system.
Yes, ma'am. I will most certainly do it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we are now signing out.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.